Welcome to Church Drunk, a spiritual conversation about faith, reason, and libations.
Hello. Spiritual or spirited?
Did I say spiritual conversation?
I think that's good though. Wow. I think you're in the mood.
Wow. The spiritual was moving me. For those of you who haven't listened before, we apologize for jumping right into it.
Sorry.
Threw you in the deep end there. We are occasionally here on Church Drunk, somewhat blasphemous, heretical.
Brand of spiritual.
Yeah, it is our brand of spiritual. And we also tend to maybe swear a little bit. A lot bit.
I would be the a lot bit.
Depending on how much we've been drinking, which is also a thing that we do here on Church Drunk.
Here.
So should you.
We are not sorry for that bit.
Unless you're not 21. Or, like, if you're an alcoholic, then you should listen to us sober as well.
Foreshadowing. Maybe if you're home alone for a long time by yourself, right. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. So, we are, I am Guess, and this is Church Drunk, and I'm here with Diz, and we always start off with the same question. Diz, what are you drinking?
I am sipping a varietal of a fine white wine, which Guess has told me is not fine at all. It's called Colombard.
Yeah, French Colombard.
French Colombard is the varietal. It's just a light white, and it was described as guileless.
Guileless.
And fresh.
Yeah.
And it is quite refreshing.
And what was it? Beautifully unadorned or
beautifully
something?
Beautifully
like
unadorned. Yeah. And I'm like, I think this is code for like cheap jug wine.
Yes. So tonight, for one night only, Dizzy is going to be guileless, fresh, and beautifully unadorned.
Just like my sweet Colombard. So, it sounds like a saint, like Saint Colombard.
Saint Colombard. Actually, I bet there is a Saint Colombard. Sure, if there's not, we're going to invent that. Mm-hmm. And maybe it'll make an appearance on Drunk Lives of the Saints.
Oh, wow. We got to find this
out. We should start making up our own.
Oh, wow.
That would be fantastic.
Don't tempt us with a good time.
Anyway, what you have is not jug wine. It's a reiteration. No, it's a reincarnation of jug wine.
It's the most hipster take on it.
Exactly.
Like, here was a gross thing that's now really good. It's tasty. It is fresh and guileless. It would probably be great in the summer.
Yeah.
But I was looking for something light. Because if you listen to last episode, I went real dark and real deep. And I'm just hoping to kind of recalibrate, come a little closer to center. It's Guess's turn to be ridiculous. Yeah. So what are you drinking, speaking of that?
I am drinking a flask bottle of Jameson Irish whiskey because it feels like we're in a bunker and this is what one would drink.
It does.
Yeah.
He's going to take a swig of it, and I'll just tell you, he's actually swigging out of his little Jameson flask.
Also, I've been robbed of my bitters, so right out of the flask bottle is how I drink this Lent.
Unadorned. Just like the Colombard.
Cheers.
Cheers. Hey, Church Drunk.
Church Drunk. So, okay. We did. Last week, we had the great joy of a guest to come and be on the podcast. It's weird for me to say guest, because normally I would not enunciate that
There's a T, quite so much.
Yeah. But yeah, Corny was fantastic. If you haven't listened to it, I know it's intimidatingly long, but go back, listen to it in parts if you need to.
Corny warmed the cockles of our Church Drunk heart.
Yeah. So we had a special episode.
Yeah.
And then it kind of weird, like life just got crazy. Like life got immediately crazy. I mean, it was already headed there. When we talked to Corny.
You never know how crazy things will get.
Like we continue to go further and further off the rails, like societally. Global, socially, it's a big deal. But in the midst of, before we get into that, that crazy chaos, right?
Yep.
That was swirling around our lives over the course of last week, we did have a very special little parcel dropped right on our doorstep by a very special listener out there. You know who you are.
Shout out, special listener.
And
you gave Guess a gift.
I did, yeah. It was great.
It's like your first, like, you know, listener gift. It's like a milestone.
It is. And knowing,
I'm a little jealous that it came to you.
Knowing that I was forced to give up my spicy by Diz for
peppers and pepper products.
Yeah, peppers and pepper products are not part of my Lent.
No pickled peppers
However,
over here.
This listener, like as you were saying, the three wise men delivers the gift of
traversed
spice
from afar
to my doorstep. Some horseradish, along with a recipe, or more of a poetic
dedication.
Dedication. Yes, to Alabama white sauce, which is about...
Sounds really bad, yeah, just to right? start off. Like, let's just say the title is...
That certainly will be the name of my future band.
Something I would never touch.
But apparently, Alabama white sauce is a type of barbecue sauce that uses horseradish for a little kick, and it's not in the pepper family horseradish, nope. Which means I get a little spicy back.
He's got some hot sauce yes. to... Dump all, so, dump some Alabama white sauce on whatever you need to.
So thank you, Balthazar, Gaspar,
Melchior,
whoever you are, whoever you want to be.
Yeah, we like you. I good old Gatsby.
You bringing spice into my life. That was a nice little smile in a crazy week. And this week on Church Drunk, we're going to be talking a little bit about how crazy it's gotten.
Yeah, so we're a couple weeks into Lent. And the world is shutting down. The world is Lenting. The world is going into isolation.
Yeah.
Social social separation, social distancing.
Going into a metaphorical desert.
Yeah. So we like it when things are really on trend.
Yeah.
When it matches up. We've personally had years that felt like Lent is just kicking us in the teeth.
Yes.
But this year, everybody's together in it, but not together.
Together, but not together.
Yeah.
Well, and it is interesting, and it is a paradox. Yeah, I so, like that. As we were kind of being like, well, should we talk about like the coronavirus and COVID-19 and all that kind of stuff? It's definitely dicey territory, and we don't plan on making a whole lot of commentary on whether it's
there's so much
right
of it out
or
there.
Wrong to react a particular way, and whether this is something that we should be afraid of or should not be afraid of, because everybody is going to react differently. And there's really no way to talk about it definitively without kind of making an ass out of yourself, unless you are actually an expert in the medical community.
So we might talk a little bit about what some churches have done or what Pope Francis has suggested.
So what we kind of want to talk about is the spiritual components of it, right? Because the first thing that I thought when there was this social distancing thing and schools are shutting down and sports are being canceled and people are encouraged to work
travel
from home
bans.
Is how... counterintuitive that is as a person of faith, as a spiritual person, that whenever there's a crisis, it tends to be that those are our most important moments of community, right? Communities gather to heal and to overcome challenges,
to comfort each other.
And yet in this particular crisis, the way that we are being advised to move through it together is not at all together, to be isolated from one another. So
and
it's an odd thing.
As an act of service to others. Yeah. Like there's this weird social component, right? They're saying like, be generous to other people. If you don't need to, don't go out, right? Like, don't.
I've been telling people this for years. The best thing that you can do for me is to go the fuck away.
If you could just cancel all of our plans, that would be great.
But... now people are listening all of a sudden.
Yeah. We'll see if it takes off.
It's straight, and like you said, it is a paradox. Like it's something where, we love that sort of mysterious component to things, so the idea that we get through it together by not being together is a little strange, but hopefully something that we can grow to be more comfortable with. It's a service. It really is. Like when you talk about how we as a community can react and protect the most vulnerable members of that community. Right.
And a lot of it's asking people to sacrifice pleasures and enjoyment for the good of others. Right? Like we're
so
canceling.
Lent-y.
It's so Lent-y.
Yeah.
We're asking people, don't go to that show you bought tickets for, or don't go to that sporting event because it just puts other people at risk.
Yeah. And there's not even sports to watch, right? I was talking to my
brother. Some of it's taken out of your hands, but I'm just saying a lot of those things are the extras in our lives.
Right.
Like we're you can still go to the grocery store and just wipe everything down.
Yeah.
Right.
But a lot of the distraction components have been taken away, right? After other major tragedies that have forced a stoppage in sports or something like that, the big story was, when are sports going to start back up, right? I remember that after, September 11th terrorist attacks, where it was when are sports going to start again?
And when there was, is normalcy coming
back? Yeah, there was kind of but now, so they serve as an important distraction and a unifying thing. And now to be we don't think there's going to be any more NBA. There's not going to be any March Madness. There's not going to be any of these things that are entertainment, right? Not huge stakes. And yet, number one, millions and billions of dollars that change hands in those types of things. And also, it's how communities rally. It is a point of identity, and people are losing it, and distraction and entertainment, and people are losing
and
it.
And of unity. It occurs to me in this time when things are so polarized and contentious, still people from all aspects enjoy sports or enjoy these events. And so it's like there's also that factor that's taken out. You know, you're not unified at all.
Right.
Except in your social isolation.
Except your social isolation. Right. Yeah. The like only thing that unifies together us
to
is...
try to do something big. And you were talking about this earlier, that this is kind of a global movement that is altruistic. I mean, it's also selfish because we all want to survive longer, but it's, but it's, you know, a lot of people who are not in the vulnerable populations sacrificing for those vulnerable populations.
Right.
So it's a cool thing.
I mean, I sort of vacillate, you know, like not only in my personal reaction to, you know, how big of a crisis is this? You know, the only way that we really can prevent it is by creating a scenario where we all look back on it and have questions about whether we actually needed to do all of that, right? Like, the best case scenario for this is we all go, huh, I don't know if we really had to do all that.
Seems like it was fine.
But then we'll know that it worked. Right. You know, like, so that's kind of weird. With it. But on a larger scale level as well, I kind of go back and forth because it feels like by doing something very small, you can be part of something that's very important. And yet at the same time, it feels like there is a fear motivator to it, right? When people are rushing out to buy up all of the prepper things off the shelves, right? There's not a lot of like calm sanity reflection on it. So how is it such a small thing that's such a big thing? How is it such a big thing that you can help by doing such a small thing? Like, these are questions that I don't really have answers to, and I just kind of ping back and forth like a ping pong ball, like all day long. Like, oh, should I do this? Should I do that? Should I do this? Should I do that? And it kind of makes your head spin.
Well, and I think like this is going to be another example of the blessing and the curse of social media, right? Because I definitely think these pictures of empty shelves, even though they were going to be restocked and like people loading up, like kind of fuels that frenzy because you think, oh, like, maybe I should go get a few things. And there's sort of this, I wasn't sure if we wanted to get into it because we didn't want to talk about it too much, but like this greed component that's kind of on the other end of this selfless thing, right? Like, yes, we're going to stay home and we're going to stay safe and whatever, but also I'm going to hoard because I don't think my community is going to take care of me or I don't think there'll be enough for me. And we live in such an abundant state. Of being like a state, but like everybody has a lot because they can go hoard.
Well, there's only a few things that you can say in life for sure, right? And I think we can add to that list of, you know, death and taxes. Like the greed creeps in, like no matter what, no matter how a movement starts with pure intentions, greed finds a way, right? Like I remember going to Vatican City, and you go to St. Peter's Square, and then you walk another block away, and there's, and you know, just rows and rows all down lining all the streets of the stalls that are selling, you know, or the little shop fronts that are selling all of the religious paraphernalia.
Yeah.
And it just kind of made me sick to my stomach, you know. And at the same time, like, it's awesome that it's there because those mementos mean something, right? And you buy them and you take them home, and it's those sacramental pieces that remind you of things.
Yeah.
And yet somebody's trying to make a buck off of it, you know? And so, and that is just a universal truth, I think, that people are going to learn how to capitalize on something, even if it starts with pure intentions, even if it's the fear of people from something that is a global crisis, someone is going to be making money off of it. And how do you, as an individual, kind of take a step back from that, you know, and avoid getting bogged down by it?
Well, I think time will tell what the overall story of this will be.
Yeah.
You know, because I mean, I think people running out to stock up whenever something happens is not unheard of. Like, I'm hoping that that will get sort of minimized in the greater telling of the story.
Right.
So I'm going to choose hope. I'm going to go on the side of hope for this one.
So yeah, you're not going to go with Jesus flipping over tables in the temple being like, how dare you? I was thinking about going to the local supermarket with a whip and being like, get out, everybody!
Yeah, I mean, I think that's always a great option. I never want to rule it out. Okay, I'm not going to be the one who stops you as you clutch your little Jameson bottle and get out of here.
Everybody.
Guess is going to think he's like going in all righteously and he's like the drunk on the street. Be like, stop it.
Exactly. I don't know. A couple people will stick around because they're into it.
They probably will if you share your drink.
Yeah.
But you can't share because there's a virus.
I know. This is mine. This is my bottle.
It's only for me.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why I'm drinking straight from the bottle because I don't want
to
share.
One way to mark your territory. Right?
But I do think that, like we said kind of at the beginning, the timing of this is a bit phenomenal in terms of like the way that we're supposed to be during this season. If you're a Lenti type person in the desert, you're supposed to be isolated.
Do you think that's why we're not like super paranoid? We're like, well, this is what happens, everyone. This is just what happens. Just don't always pay attention, but every year we go out to this.
I mean, we've had some Uber Lents, you and I. Like,
there have been some
other times in life where Lent has synchronized with some crazy shit.
I'm a little superstitious about it. I'm like, oh, here comes Lent. Like,
we've never done global though. We've never had everybody else in Lent with us when it's been Uber Lent.
Like super Lenting. Like it's like a super moon, you know, it's a super Lent.
Yeah, super blood wolf moon or whatever that is.
Yeah. Well, that's a good one. So.
Yeah. Well, But no, I think that we've talked, you know, on a personal level about how this Lent has been a struggle because of the distractions, right? Because of the, you know, not only the virus outbreak and the pandemic, but the election cycle and just all of the sort of pile up of stuff that you really do have to be intentional about sifting through it to build a clear connection, you know, to God
and
in your prayer life.
Give yourself that time.
And maybe if I was better practiced at it, it wouldn't take quite so long, but it's like a real intentional thing right now.
Are you saying that the coronavirus is our fault for being too distracted during Lent, that God was like, well, I guess I have to send you back to your houses?
That's some Old Testament yourself. Shit right there. That is some
if you will not tune up, I will tune
angry,
you up.
Angry, vengeful Book of Job shit.
You know, I love the Book of Job. I think it's a great story.
It is. It's a great story. Yeah. So some people get afflicted by boils and some people get coronavirus.
I mean, we've talked we've talked about it where God just is like, if you don't listen to me, I will put you in the belly of a whale and then you can do what I want when you get out. And now he's like, I will put you back in your dirty house. Well,
so
we'll
I think
to wait and see.
At the very least, what it can do is it can call us to you know, like as you are, you know, socially distancing and doing all that stuff, which again, like is appropriate. I am for it. I encourage it. Yeah. Wash your hands, be smart, do the things that you need to do. But, you know, if you have a little bit of extra time on your hands to twiddle your thumbs, and not everybody will, right? Because sometimes A, home is more chaotic than work, and B, sometimes, you know, like you find yourself needing to work from home and you know, stuff like that. So it's not like the whole world is grinding to a halt. But if you do find yourself with a few free minutes and it's the time when you normally would be going and doing some sort of social activity that you wouldn't do, then what do you turn to and how do you fill that time? And maybe it's then that those little practices of Lent can become a little bit more available.
Right, you know, right.
We've both struggled with our spiritual reading thus far.
Haven't gotten real deep into it. Although I've made like just micro progress. Like I have read even this week, but just not a ton. And I think it is back to that distraction thing where I have the time coming up, I haven't been able to like sit for a long chunk of time. But I did, you know, I've read a little bit of my Memento Mori book, which I have to say is just, like I said, it was a little bit of like anticlimactic. Like I thought it was going to be like really different, and it's just not that different. And I like the exam, and it's fine, but it's nothing like yet to write home about.
Right.
And I'm into the other one, which was Regarding the Pain of Others, and it's a very interesting conversation to start with. I've only read the first bit, but it actually began with like Virginia Woolf having this letter writing conversation with a journalist in New York, asking what we can do about war. He was writing to her about these images that they were showing of of war, and her writing back saying there's no we, there's men and women, and kind of saying like men are the ones who kind of like war in a different way. Like, if you just asked women, we'd be like, yeah, we're not doing that anymore.
This is stupid.
And men are like, but we gotta win, you know. And so it's kind of this just teasing out a bit, who is the we?
Right, and
where is the responsibility? Not like she wasn't really blaming them. This is a man and a woman corresponding to their friends. Right. Like it's an interesting conversation, and I didn't think it was going to go quite that way in analyzing it. But I think it does actually tie into sort of, I think there we see a parallel in the faith of how women understand the suffering of Christ and how men do.
Yeah,
and we see that even like in the biblical portrayals of it. So it's kind of an interesting
Fascinating.
I haven't thought that way. So it's making me think. I'll say that much.
That's good.
I don't know if it's...
Well, and it's... I mean, there is certainly a tie-in to what we see going on where, you know, like still, even in the midst of all the chaos, I saw two or three stories this week about, you know, like the U.S. soccer trying to reiterate the fact that, like, men's soccer is more skillful and therefore deserves more money than women's soccer, and then the president of U.S. soccer needing to step down, right? And I couldn't help but notice during today's White House Rose Garden press conference that there were a whole lot of men standing up front talking about how the titans of industry are going to fix this outbreak. And then one woman who actually was a medical expert, from what I could tell, based on the very brief introduction that she got, that kind of had to like walk her way around to the front and take the microphone. And she spoke for a little while. She didn't exactly blow me away, but just to have her step forward and then to have a question asked by a female reporter that was called a nasty question.
Oh, God.
Yeah. You haven't even looked into that, have you?
Oh,
yeah.
Let me just hold my drink closer to my mouth.
It highlights all of that, right? Like, there still very much is an atmosphere of men know the way and they will know how to fix this. And women, isn't it cute that we let you into the club?
Right.
Yeah.
And I guess the little tiny bit of progress we can say is that we notice this now, right? Like we're aware of it. We're like, that's not that cool. And it's still happening. How do we... navigate this,
right?
And not to, like, you know, we love men, we need men, but
we need both, and we need them to talk to each other, and we need to recognize the skills that each brings to the table,
right?
And I think that's an excellent point that gets brought up at the beginning of this, that, you know, like, you look at history and men have fought wars and women have tried to pick up the pieces when that has been
in the aftermath. How can we prevent this? Well, it's like, well, how can you bros prevent this, know? And if we need to jar you somehow.
Once I say that, what about the Viking shield maidens?
I mean, badasses. They were awesome and we all want to be them.
Yeah.
So, testosterone shots for everyone.
Well, I...
Okay, yeah, what about your reading?
How's crashed and burned with the first attempt, as I already said, John Paul II.
Yeah, no, he's gone. I thought we moved on.
We did, yeah.
Okay.
And then I got another daily reader book, and I literally haven't even opened it yet.
Okay, so there's hope for that one.
This was not going to be...
You've been watching horrible, like, White House things and, like, writing prolific letters.
This was not ever going to be the Lent of me being a daily spiritual reader, I'm finding out.
I think you're being a daily spiritual writer.
Yeah, I do. I try a little bit more with that. Yeah. And I did, as I realized, like, okay, I've struck out on two books, like, that night, and this was a couple weeks ago that I was like, all right, I have to order the Bowles Weber.
The Bowles Weber.
So I ordered my Postreeks book from Nadia Bowles Weber, and that's much more my style. Cool. So that is one that I can read, nightly. It's just that it's not meant to be like a daily reflection, but I will use it that way.
Sure.
That has always been what I've had the most success with, is taking something that was not meant to be a daily reflection and kind of turning it into that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because the daily reflection books are out of necessity, not that deep.
Right.
Usually. Like, it's a quick thing.
Right.
Our friend who recommended the Nadia Bowles Weber.
Yes.
It was like super annoyed with our pronunciation. I was like, that's not how she talks.
Bowles Weber.
And I'm like, it is now.
Yeah. And speaking of shield maidens, the Bowles Weber basically is like the shield maiden of the spiritual world right now.
Yeah.
She's like a badass and she swears and she doesn't really care and she has all sorts of fun reflections that make you giggle in the way that we tend to, you and I. Yeah, do. So, my guess is I'm going to probably blast through it, and maybe you can read it during Lent as well.
Oh, that would be a good
motivation
for me to get through my non-fun
book. Because there's somewhere in the neighborhood of like 18, 19 chapters, something like that. And they're short. They're a few pages each. So if I'm doing it, you know, one or two per day, then I should be able to give it to you by the end of Lent.
I can't wait. And I promise I won't steal it before you're ready to give it to me.
Maybe not.
We'll see how fast you read. Okay, but let's say that it's properly, though. So it's called Pastriks.
Pastriks.
But it's like P-A-S-T-R-I-C-S.
X.
Oh, X. Pastriks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I guess, and I don't know if it's Pastriks or
Pastriks?
If it's Pastriks.
Pastriks.
It should be pronounced Pastriks because apparently this is a term that's used in like a derogatory way in like the evangelical community,
like,
to refer to female pastors.
Oh, Yeah,
which I did not know until I picked up the book. So, and she being a female pastor who also just loves to, you know, twist the knife.
She's like, it's mine now.
Yep, I'm going to take this.
I love that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's okay. That's cool. That gives a lot of info. Honest question, though. Female pastors kind of creep you out? Just because we're not used to them.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say creeps me out is the way that I would describe it.
Yeah, that's not nice.
It makes me do a double take. Yeah. Like, I need a reminder
it's
sometimes.
It's not that it creeps me out, but I always feel like a little like, where do I look when I see them? Because I want to stare at their collar.
From the shoulders up.
It takes me... Guys, yes is obviously like fully so far ahead as like the better feminist of church struck. Let there be no doubt amongst us. This is not the first episode where this is apparent, but like especially tonight.
That's awesome.
No, because when I see them, I'm distracted by their collar.
By the collar, yeah.
I'm totally. Not looking at their boobies. I'm looking at their collar because it's so... And I'm for it. I'm totally cool with it. Except I'm like, do you feel weird? But like, they don't feel weird. Like, that's probably like their tradition they've grown up in and it's not different. And I kind of wish I had that perspective.
It's like when I worked at the Protestant summer camp and they did their like Eucharistic service with like
grape
a loaf
juice.
of sourdough bread and some grape juice. And I still treated it afterwards as if it were like the precious body and blood of our Lord. And they were like, just going to take it to the kitchen and like dump it out, throw it out. Cause they're like, we're done with this. Right. Like the service is finished and there's leftovers, but it's just bread and wine.
Yeah.
And even though like, I really don't have any problem with that. Even if it is real Eucharist, like I'm not a big time, like,
yeah, you are.
I have to super protect it. And then I found out though,
yeah,
like,
you are.
I really am.
No,
and I was like,
are.
You guys can't throw that out. Right.
Yeah.
Like what the hell?
Even though it wasn't real Eucharist.
So it's just, you know, like the environment that you grow up in is the environment that you grow up in. You can do nothing about it. So a female pastor are two words that we never grew up with together.
Unfortunately.
And so then all of a sudden when we see one, when we hear one, it's kind of like, wait a minute.
I think that's what it's like. I'm like very curious about it. And I feel like it's inappropriate to be that curious. Like, I hope I like personally know one somewhere where I'm like, can I just like... be asking of rude questions like right now, like you're just observing and maybe it's just more interactions are needed.
I'm only a couple chapters in, but I can tell you that the fact that she is female is the least inappropriate thing about Nadia Bolz-Weber.
I really love
for a variety of reasons.
Pastor Bolz-Weber.
Bolz-Weber.
I have some questions.
We really need to stop doing that.
I'm really trying to get my voice better, my Boris voice. I'm always jealous of some of Guess's voices, and that's one I haven't done a lot of. Now I have a reason.
Well, I think we may find Pastrix on the Church Drunk Lenten reading list, which with a little bit of extra time in our more isolated state for the next couple weeks, hopefully I'll have time to throw together and get some input from you and we can get that posted on the website.
Okay.
And musical stations of the cross. Yeah, churchdrunk.com. Check it out.
Lenten
playlist.
Sometimes
we post things that are not podcasts. Yeah, and then we got the Stations of the Cross playlist every Lent as well. I usually do that, you know, like getting closer to Holy Week.
Yeah.
But again, a little extra time on my hands this year,
we'll
so it may
see.
Get posted early and listen to it more. We'll
I
see.
Know you've been collecting some songs. I've got
I have.
Some previews, and I'm down with it.
I have.
I'm excited.
So, I think that's probably Church Drunk for the week, and now we can
next week,
go into our little hidey holes.
Yeah. Next week from our hidey holes... We'll be visiting St. Columbard if Saint he or she
Columbard.
Exists. Or even if they don't.
Even if they don't. There might be an appearance from St. Columbard because it is St. Paddy's Day week.
Yes.
Which holds a special place.
Traditional
in our
drunk lives.
Little soaked up sponge whiskey blood hearts. Because traditionally that's when we do Drunk Lives of the Saints.
Yes.
And sometimes we drop them at other times in the year, but we usually
especially
you can guarantee.
Then.
Yeah. So we step out of Lent and into Drunk Lives of the Saints next week, and
Saint
I'm pretty
Patrick's
excited
Day
for it.
Day exemption.
Yeah, exactly.
So you should suggest a saint to us to look at or talk about.
If you think there's a saint that you want to hear us talk about with relatively coherent sentences, then let us know.
Yeah. You can email us at churchdrunk@gmail.com.
Tweet me @churchdrunkpod.
Yep. Or a comment on the blog. You can do that too.
So like I said, we'll be posting a couple things on the blog in the next week or two, and feel free to comment on that. We can check those as well.
Yeah.
We appreciate all the feedback. And
stay safe.
one special listener who is all three kings at once.
Yes.
Thank you for the gift.
Shout out.
And yeah, stay safe and keep each other safe and build those immunities and
alone
do all
and together.
Those things that we need to do alone and together.
Don't be greedy.
Yeah. We'll see you next time here on Church Drunk, where we've got a fever and the only cure is more cowbell.
Clink,
or more columbard.
More columbard.
Cheers.
Peace.